This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, January 13th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Springdale claims the lead in job creation for Arkansas. Plus a story of moving from small-town Arkansas to post-punk fame. This week's edition of Arkansongs highlights the career of Beth Ditto. And in about 6 minutes, an update on the rollout of the Affordable Care Act in Arkansas, now that the calendar has turned. First, a report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the rate of lung cancer is in decline in Arkansas. Dr. Gary Wheeler is with the Arkansas Department of Health. He says the number of cases of lung cancer per 100,000 people had been steadily increasing, reaching a peak 6 years ago. In 2007, there were 84 cases of lung cancer per 100,000 people in the state. In 2010, Wheeler says, that number had dropped to about 70 cases per 100,000.
So that's a really dramatic downturn. And again, I think while lung cancer reflects things that were done 20 years ago, we do know that when people stop smoking, they begin to see benefits as far as malignancy, cardiac disease, and other things that happen potentially even quicker.
He says the state struggled for many years to prevent a rise in lung cancer.
For a long time, we didn't see any dips in our cancer rates. Our rates were still going up at a time when the national rates had been going down for a while. And this is to me, the big story is that up to about 3 or 4 years ago, our overall rates of cancer were still rising, and now we're finally seeing a decline. So that's very, very good information for the state.
Wheeler attributes the decline of lung cancer to public health awareness efforts carried out both locally and nationally. Governor Mike Beebe is touting the increase of Arkansans receiving college degrees. In his recent radio address, the governor stated 20% of state residents over age 25 now have college degrees. That's an improvement from the 1 in 8 who held degrees in the early 1990s. Although an improvement, Governor Beebe says Arkansas isn't alone in improving its residents' attainment of degrees.
Despite our progress, Arkansas still ranks 49th nationally in adults with college degrees. 11 states now have rates of 30% or higher, and most have rates of at least 25%. I've said repeatedly that this is the area of education that warrants a particularly sharp focus in the coming years. We need to further improve our rates of degrees, not just to stay competitive with other states, but to make sure we don't miss a huge opportunity on the horizon.
The governor says current initiatives, such as college worker training programs, are an incentive for businesses looking to relocate to Arkansas, and emphasizing STEM education will help prepare more students for emerging fields of employment. After several calls for his resignation and increased potential of being impeached for ethics violations, Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar announced late Friday he will resign from office effective February 1st. In a statement, the lieutenant governor maintained he had been honest, forthright, and acted with integrity, and he further stated he had made mistakes, but not with malicious intent. Lieutenant Governor Dar said he had spoken with House Speaker Davy Carter and Senate Pro Tem Michael Lamoureux, whom he said agreed the decision to resign was in the best interest for Dar, his family, and the state. The Tyler Bend Visitor Center at Buffalo National River is closed while crews make repairs after significant water damage. According to Buffalo National River officials, the water damage occurred last week when an overhead sprinkler system pipe broke, causing two workstations in the administrative area of the center to be damaged. However, none of the center's public space was affected, including exhibit items. The facility is expected to reopen next week. Renovations to football facilities are in the near future for Greenland High School. The Greenland School Board last week approved a contractor to begin site preparations for the work, which will include a 6,000-square-foot fieldhouse and concession stand, new bleachers to replace the decades-old wood seating for home spectators, a new press box, a new 120-meter running track and jump pit, a new entrance ticket booth, and fencing around the stadium. Charles Cudney, Greenland superintendent, says school patrons will start seeing the changes in the next few weeks as the contractor begins site preparation work.
That involves building the dirt pad for the buildings to sit on and doing some renovation to the water drainage system to improve that. And that will be happening over the next month or so. And then we're hoping once that's completed, we'll be at a point where we can open bids for the actual building construction to start, which I would anticipate happening mid-March, with completion prior to the beginning of the next school year, 2014.
The overall project is expected to cost about $1 million. But Superintendent Cudney says the district will receive a lot of value for the money.
We're bidding all of those packages that I listed as separate contracts, and then the district, the state allows us to do self-construct, which means we manage the project as, in essence, the general contractor, so that will allow us to save a significant amount of money on the project. So we're hopeful. We certainly don't know until the final bids come in, but there's certainly a lot of excitement among our students and as well as patrons in the community about this project.
He says parents, Greenland Booster Club members, and school staff in previous years tried to raise funds for the renovation, but failed to receive the necessary funds to actually begin the construction process. Instead, district officials have refinanced some current bond debt to raise about $700,000 in order to begin the renovation this year. The Arkansas women's basketball team lost its second game in a row yesterday afternoon as they fell at home to Mississippi State 54-50. The Razorbacks will be on the road again Thursday to travel to Athens, Georgia to face the Georgia Bulldogs. Arkansas now 14-3 overall, 1-3 in SEC play. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 31. Sunny tomorrow, highs will be in the upper 40s in northwest Arkansas, mid-50s tomorrow afternoon in the Arkansas River Valley. And tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows in the mid-20s. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansans who successfully enrolled in person, by mail, or via the digital health insurance marketplace portal by the December deadline are now eligible for medical coverage under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich provides a status report.
Arkansas is one of seven states which partnered with the federal government in setting up a health insurance exchange, now called Marketplace. 17 other states and the District of Columbia are running their own exchanges, and 25 remaining states have refused to participate in Obamacare. So how many Arkansans have enrolled so far? Heather Haywood is spokesperson for the Arkansas Insurance Commission Office of the Affordable Care Act.
We anticipate that the Department of Health and Human Services will release enrollment data in mid-January. And that would be a cumulative total from October the 1st through December 31st.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services last issued any data in late November, and at that time, only 1,400 Arkansans had enrolled through the exchange. After an abysmal launch riddled with technical problems, the federal enrollment portal is running smoothly now. Individuals who enroll by January 15th will have coverage starting February 1st. Open enrollment ends March 31st.
Yes, it's important to remember that we're only halfway through a sustained six-month enrollment period.
500,000 Arkansans who don't have any health insurance are expected to enroll in the coming years. Monthly premium plans classified by metallic values vary according to actuarial values. The least expensive bronze plan covers 60% of expected costs, with consumers paying the balance. Platinum plans cover 90% of the costs, so tend to be expensive. For lower-income Arkansans, there's plenty of financial help. Of nearly 30 million potential enrollees nationwide, 17 million Americans are eligible for tax subsidies.
For approximately 80% of Arkansans that are uninsured, there is assistance available when you purchase health insurance through the new health insurance marketplace. Once an individual is determined eligible, there are tax credits and advanced tax credits that will assist in offsetting the cost of health insurance premium.
Hardship subsidies are also available. Arkansans can choose from a menu of brokers that offer plans that fit your income, including companies such as Arkansas Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and QualChoice. Thousands of Arkansans are discovering they qualify for newly expanded Medicaid coverage. Historically, Medicaid was restricted to impoverished children, their parents, the aged, or individuals with disabilities. But the new eligibility level is set for individuals 19 to 64 years old living at 138% of poverty. That's $15,850 for a single person, $27,000 for a family of three. Conservatives tried to block Medicaid expansion nationwide, but in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court left it up to states to decide. Last year, the Arkansas General Assembly passed the private option, using federal Medicaid dollars allocated to states to purchase private health insurance for as many as 250,000 Arkansas residents. Amy Webb is Director of Communications for the Arkansas Department of Human Services, which is overseeing the complex nuts and bolts of Medicaid expansion.
As of January 4th, we had 112,960 applicants.
Applicants applied through a special public assistance web portal.
They were able to apply for the private option through our regular public assistance portal, which is access.arkansas.gov. And then we also had over 9,000 that we've been able to process so far that applied through the federal site.
The federal portal, healthcare.gov. So how many Arkansans are now officially enrolled in the private option?
So far, 85,328 have been determined eligible, and they are now somewhere in the enrollment process. Of those 85,000, 66,063 have completed the enrollment process as of January 6th. And, you know, so they have selected or been assigned a health insurance plan, and they're ready to go.
An additional 6,760 who were screened by ADHS qualified for traditional Medicaid.
So we have a total of 72,823 people who will now have coverage who are completely enrolled.
Private option enrollees receive an ID number and insurance cards, which are identical to conventionally insured.
We have 46,275 private option enrollees who have Blue Cross Blue Shield, either the state or the national one. We have 11,063 people who have Ambetter and 1,246 people who have QualChoice.
Private option program will undergo a legislative audit this coming year, and state legislators will consider reauthorizing the use of federal Medicaid dollars this coming budget session, slated to start next month. Until then, ADHS spokeswoman Amy Webb says they're very encouraged by the turnout.
Our employees have been working very hard to build this system, to make sure that people could enroll if they needed coverage, and to know that there is that level of need and that level of interest makes their hard work, you know, even more meaningful.
As for those with enough net income, come tax time, the IRS will ask if we have medical insurance coverage. And if you don't, you will be taxed $95 per adult, $47.50 per child in 2014, or 1% of your taxable income, whichever is greater. Doesn't sound like much compared to monthly premiums, but in future years, penalties will increase. Adding fuel to the healthcare marketplace technical glitch fire late last year was the news that 500,000 Americans who purchased private health insurance saw their policies canceled because companies said the plans didn't meet ACA muster. But that didn't occur in Arkansas. Once again, Heather Haywood, spokesperson for the Arkansas Insurance Commission, Office of the Affordable Care Act.
Insurance Commissioner Jay Bradford issued a bulletin back in March of 2013 that allowed Arkansas carriers to extend coverage for an additional year. So in Arkansas, we did not see that mass numbers of policy cancellations.
And that's likely another reason why Arkansas's National State Exchange ACA report card, issued by Decision Resource Group late last year, ranked us, along with four other states, at the top based on enrollment, innovation, and the private option model. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, you can go to arhealthconnector.org, or you can call toll-free 855-283-3483. That's 855-283-3483. One down, 51 to go. The first full work week of 2014 yielded plenty to talk about. There were layoffs, tax revenue numbers, and discussion of a possible hike in Arkansas's minimum wage. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has his usual Monday roundup of the previous week's political and business news.
Axiom Corporation began a round of layoffs this week that corporate leaders suggested would be forthcoming when they reported earnings last November. Roughly 50 workers, some in middle management positions, are part of this round of layoffs, although less than half are in Arkansas. A smaller contingency of upper management personnel were let go last year after Axiom announced a restructuring program, and more job cuts may be forthcoming before the end of March when the company's fiscal year ends. A spokesperson for Axiom said the Little Rock-based data marketer would not comment on moves related to what was outlined in that November earnings announcement. December tax revenues in Arkansas saw a small spike from a one-time gain, which led to a 3.5% increase in overall collections at the halfway mark in the state's fiscal year. Year-to-date net available general revenues climbed to $2.5 billion. That's up $85 million, or 3.5% above year-ago levels. That figure is 1.3% above forecast. In December, overall net revenues totaled $472 million, about 3.4% from a year ago. Attorney General Dustin McDaniel approved the ballot title for an effort to raise the minimum wage in Arkansas from $6.25 per hour to $8.50 per hour by 2017. Give Arkansas a Raise Now, which submitted the ballot proposal, now has until July 7th to gather more than 62,000 valid voter signatures in order to qualify for the November 4th general election ballot. The Morrilton Area Chamber of Commerce and the Conway County Economic Development Corporation are seeking a 5-year quarter-cent sales tax to be used for job recruitment to Conway County in the River Valley. The Conway County Quorum Court approved a special election for March 11, 2014. The tax, if passed, will be used to recruit new jobs to Conway County and assist existing business and industry within the county with workforce training and expansion needs, including infrastructure for things such as water, sewer, and gas. It's estimated to generate roughly $4.25 million over the 5-year period, and the tax would sunset unless reauthorized by voters. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. In about 20 minutes on Ozarks, how beauty pageants in Tanzania can provide a way to higher education.
And many young women, many Tanzanians in general, but particularly many young women are curtailed even in getting a high school education, even a couple of years of high school education for various reasons. And so having, and the biggest reason being financial reasons, and so having this possibility of earning money to send yourself back to school is humongous, is a really, really big thing.
Sabrina Billings, an assistant professor in the University of Arkansas's Department of African and American Studies, talks about her just-published book, Language and Globalization in the Making of a Tanzanian Beauty Queen. That conversation ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, in James Scott's stunning debut novel, The Kept, even upstate New York's winter sky has a role to play in a tale of murder and revenge.
When those storms gather over the lakes and they come in, the sky is just so oppressive. It's just this steely gray mass that really weighs down on you.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Stay tuned to KUAF. Today's Here and Now can be heard next after Ozarks at Large at 1 o'clock.
It is Monday, January 13th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Still excited about getting back out in the world.
Well, between the winter storm in mid-December, then the holidays, and then more little storms hither and yon, it's everyone's kind of been off routine, I think.
So we're getting back to it. And you can start this week with Sandwiched In on Wednesday at noon at the Shiloh Museum.
This is free.
This is free. They have cookies.
It's better than free, then.
They also have a program on coverlets, which are not the same thing as quilts.
As you have told me in the past.
And never the twain shall meet, because the two groups get very offended if you don't understand.
Now, from a practical standpoint, they serve the same purpose, to keep me warm?
Yes, they're both intended to keep you warm.
So for a layperson, it's understandable if there is some confusion.
The difference is a quilt, a lot of the old quilts were made of leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
And a coverlet was designed for its purpose because it's woven.
Gotcha.
And the design is woven into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it started life as what it is. And
gotcha.
A quilt started life as a house dress.
Or a shirt, or right.
So it's really interesting. But these two lovely ladies, Mary Benson of Eureka Springs and Laura Redford of Rogers, saw a textile at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale that they liked. They decided they were going to research the coverlets in the Shiloh collection, and they've come up with this program now to talk about them.
All right.
It'll be really interesting. Like I said, it's free. And they have cookies.
And that's Wednesday.
At noon at the Shiloh Museum.
Usually takes about an hour?
It depends on who's talking.
Okay. But you could go at lunch and get a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
You had to go back to work.
That's the name. You can bring your sandwich and eat. Nobody will make fun of you.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs. Arkansas, your Beth Ditto was born Mary Beth Patterson in White County and lived in Judsonia in Georgetown. She grew up singing, especially in choir. Ditto's first rock band was called Little Miss Muffet. Nathan Houdeshell was born in Searcy, also in White County. He played guitar and keyboards. His early bands included Mrs. Garrett and Space Cadet. Ditto recalls him wearing three-piece polyester suits and Buddy Holly glasses in high school. Beth Ditto and Nathan Houdeshell would later join drummer Kathy Mendonca of Searcy to form The Gossip. The band first got together in Olympia, Washington, after Beth Ditto joined her Arkansas friends in the American Pacific Northwest. Serendipitously, a member of Sleater-Kinney saw the new band at a gig and was impressed. So incredibly, the Gossip had just played a couple of shows, and the three-piece were invited on tour. The first show on the Sleater-Kinney tour was at the famed 7th Street Entry in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Following a 1999 EP on K Records, the Gossip's first full-length, That's Not What I Heard, was released on Kill Rock Stars, Sleater-Kinney's record label. Beth Ditto was 19. After another EP, Arkansas Heat, the Gossip released Movement, which Ditto called the band's first grown-up record, and toured Scotland. Gossip drummer Kathy Mendonca of Searcy left the trio in 2005. The band's 2006 breakthrough album, Standing in the Way of Control, with new drummer Hannah Blilly, saw the Gossip gaining attention in England and the United Kingdom. The trio then issued a live album, Undead, in NYC. Music for Men, the Gossip's 2009 follow-up, was produced by Rick Rubin and recorded at Shangri-La Studios in Malibu, California, for Columbia Records. In the late 1970s, the studio was partly owned by Arkansas Levon Helm and the band. In May 2012, the Gossip released its fifth full-length album called A Joyful Noise. It reached number 3 in France, number 2 in Germany, and number 1 in Switzerland. Meanwhile, Beth Ditto moved to Portland, Oregon, and became a notable name in the UK and the US above and beyond the Gossip's music. She launched her own plus-size fashion lines for Evans and Forever 21 and modeled in Paris. While the Gossip maintained a high profile overseas, both Ditto and Houdeshell have continued to work with fellow Arkansas musicians, especially White County natives, including Bonnie Montgomery and Isaac Alexander of Searcy and Greg Spradlin of Pangburn. Here in its entirety is The Gossip, featuring Arkansas's Beth Ditto, Kathy Mendonca, and Nathan Brace Payne Houdeshell of White County with Got All This Waiting from the trio's 2000 album, That's Not What I Heard. Thank you. The Original Gossip, featuring Arkansas's Beth Ditto, Kathy Mendonca, and Nathan Brace Payne Houdeshell of White County with Got All This Waiting from the trio's 2000 album, That's Not What I Heard. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
In about 5 minutes on Ozarks at Large, a new study from the Milken Institute places Springdale at the top in Arkansas and near the top nationally when it comes to recent job growth. The economic prospects for 2014 will be discussed Thursday at the 2014 Business Forecast Luncheon presented by the Center for Business and Economic Research at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. The forecast includes a discussion of expectations for local, state, national, and international economies for the next 12 months. Panelists will include the Assistant Vice President, St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank, the Chief Economist for Bloomberg Brief, and Kathy Deck, the Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research. Thursday's luncheon is at the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers and is scheduled to last from 11:30 until 1. More than 1,000 people are expected to attend the event, the 20th annual. The 50th anniversary of Youth Bridge will be celebrated next month at the Embassy Suites in Rogers. The annual It's a Wonderful Life Gala is scheduled for February 13th, beginning at 6. Funds raised this year will support the Benton County Emergency Shelter for Youth in Centerton and the Transitional Living Program for Young Adults in Fayetteville. Tickets are $95 and can be purchased online at youthbridge.com or at the agency's administration office, which is at 2153 Joyce Boulevard in Fayetteville. End-of-year numbers at the River Valley Regional Food Bank indicate the facility in Fort Smith was responsible for distributing more than 7.5 million pounds of food in 2013. That's an increase of about 1 million pounds, or more than 15%, over 2012. The agency supplied by the River Valley Regional Food Bank reported assisting an average of more than 14,000 families each month in 2013. Feeding America, a national organization, estimates the average value of a pound of food at $1.69, meaning the food bank's distribution is valued at more than $12 million. And the food bank says the distribution in 2013 included more than 2 million pounds of fresh produce. And the annual homeless vigil, sponsored each year by the Fayetteville High School Student Council, will be held tonight, beginning at 5. The vigil is scheduled to continue through tomorrow until the goal of $20,000 raised is met. The vigil was originally scheduled for December, you may remember, but was canceled because of winter weather. Student Council members will spend the night in makeshift housing on the front lawn of Fayetteville High School. Both cash donations and food items can be dropped off and will be used to help the district's Families in Transition program. And by the way, the Student Council members at Fayetteville High will also hold a blood drive tomorrow at Fayetteville High School. This is Ozarks at Large. The Milken Institute recently released its 2013 rankings of best-performing cities. And in those rankings, Northwest Arkansas is the 57th best metro area in the United States out of 200 large metropolitan areas. Springdale came in second in the nation in that report in terms of short-term job growth for the period between July 2012 and July 2013. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas recently spoke with Bill Rogers, Vice President of Communications with the Springdale Chamber of Commerce, to find out where this job growth is coming from. He says the numbers released by the Milken Institute match perfectly with the numbers the Chamber has been tracking as far as how the region compares to the rest of the state.
It's really a remarkable story. You know, in 2013, Washington County was rated as one of the top 10 counties in all of the United States in terms of job creation. Fayetteville and Springdale's job growth obviously driving that. But when you look at the last 12 months, And this data is from the Arkansas Workforce Services website. But if you look at the last 12 months, and the top 10 largest cities in Arkansas, so just looking at the main job creators in the state, our four cities in Northwest Arkansas have accounted for 86% of the new jobs that were created in 2013 in the last 12 months. That's a staggering figure, but when it's even better if you look at the last 2 years, we've produced 94% of the new jobs of those that were created by the top 10 largest cities in Arkansas.
Do we have any idea how many jobs were added last year?
We do. If you're looking at 12 months, yes. Fayetteville had 1150. Springdale was right behind that at 1,022. Rogers created 819, and Bentonville created 560. Now, if you want to look at the, I don't want to make your listeners' head swims with numbers, but if you look at the top 10 largest cities in the state for the last 12 months, and that's from November to December, because the December 13 numbers are not out
right,
yet.
Right.
Those 10 cities created 4,152 jobs, and the four Northwest Arkansas cities created 3,551 jobs.
Pretty much all of them.
pretty much. And
a majority.
When you look, that's right. Absolutely. Right. When you look at about 3 months ago, when we were looking at that month's statistics, there were only the four Northwest Arkansas cities and one other had even positive numbers for 12 and 24-month time frames. The rest of the state's 10 largest cities were actually in negative numbers. Again, everybody gets a good month or two, and the economy is picking up, but I think clearly the economy is picking up more quickly here in Northwest Arkansas, and we see this all across the board. We see it in housing starts. We see it in sales tax revenue. Our region continues to grow in population.
Well, I know you said that you couldn't exactly say where these new jobs have been added, but you're at the Springdale Chamber of Commerce. So you see new businesses that come into Springdale. And
sure.
I know in the last few months, Suncoast Baking is bringing, over close to 200 new jobs to Springdale.
That's right. And we're going to get your email question about that. We get that question a lot. We get these numbers from the state's research, and they don't break those out, even by category. But you're right. From an anecdotal standpoint, if you look at our region, South Coast Baking is going to hire initially 50 and ramp up to 150, and may even be better than that. We had another plant announcement, expansion announcement, American Tubing, adding about 30 jobs. It takes a while to pick up 1,000 jobs in a year that we've got. But if you look, as we look across our community, Springdale in particular, we are very blessed to have a very diverse economy. We have a very strong manufacturing and industrial sector. We do have, from an office and professional services standpoint, very strong. And you have to remember how large and strong our school district is. That employment certainly makes an impact there, and our school district continues to grow.
It's growing, yeah.
As does our healthcare industry. We have right now in our pipeline more than a handful of companies that we are working with today to move them toward opening or expansion of jobs in Springdale. And all the communities in Northwest Arkansas, I can promise you, are experiencing positive results in that area, because our economy is clicking right now. And when you have an available and qualified workforce and you have businesses or investors that are ready to, risk some capital and to either expand or to move and to build, we have an environment here that is a perfect environment for that kind of growth.
Well, my next question was going to be your predictions for 2014, but that kind of goes along with that.
I absolutely believe 2013 was a very good year. In the last 4 years, Springdale has created just over 7,500 jobs, and no other city in the state has created that many jobs. So we do more than 100 business retention and expansion visits a year. In 2013, the responses we got from those the leaders in those different businesses was that they anticipate 14 being a good year. Hard to say how good, but certainly there's continued optimism there, and I think at least as you look at job growth numbers, it certainly bears that out.
Well, I know that there have been some efforts to revitalize parts of downtown Springdale.
Mm-hmm.
Will that also contribute to Springdale's economy? And, I mean, a little bit of job growth, right?
Well, we certainly expect it to, yes. You know, there's more enthusiasm and momentum for redoing and changing the face of downtown Springdale as there's been in years and years. It's a very, very exciting time for Springdale and for downtown. There's no question that the Razorback Greenway Trail was an impetus behind that. But, you know, to see that kind of remarkable investment as a gift almost, both from a public and a private investment standpoint, our city council has stepped up to the plate. In the next few months, you know, there's going to be some buildings raised in downtown Springdale, some park space created to accentuate the trail that comes through here. We have in the process, Downtown Springdale Alliance is working to move forward with a planning project that is very, very exciting. And what goes hand in hand with that is the opportunity for entrepreneurial investment, restaurants. I mean, where there are people, and the Razorback Greenway is going to bring people right through downtown Springdale on top of those that are downtown already. But when you've got that kind of new and fresh energy, it creates opportunity for the entrepreneur to open up a coffee shop or open up a restaurant or a boutique of some sort. And we fully expect downtown Springdale to reap the same kinds of rewards that downtown Bentonville has seen.
Good deal. Well, thank you, Mr. Rogers. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with Bill Rogers, Vice President of Communications with the Springdale Chamber of Commerce. If you'd like to see how Northwest Arkansas and Springdale compare to other metro areas in the nation, you can go online to milkeninstitute.org/publications.
On the next Fresh Air, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She grew up in a drug-ravaged South Bronx neighborhood. She says the tragedy she saw there helped her understand that as a judge,
the people who came before me as defendants were human beings with good and potentially very bad things within them.
Her memoir is out in paperback. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. In her just-published book, Language and Globalization in the Making of a Tanzanian Beauty Queen, Sabrina Billings explores issues of status, language, and race. She is an assistant professor in the Department of African and African American Studies at the University of Arkansas, and she heads up the Swahili Language Program at the U of A, the university's first offering of an indigenous African language. She's scheduled to discuss her new book Friday evening at 5:30 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The book comes after multiple extended stays to Tanzania and her initial observance that beauty pageants in Tanzania are something quite different than the pageants held in the U.S.
Originally, the idea came about through my first trip to East Africa. I went on a sort of an intensive Swahili language summer thing, and there was in a mid-sized town a few hours away from the capital city, and I saw a banner hanging in the middle of the city announcing a beauty pageant, and this was so novel to me. I had no idea that these existed there, so I sort of convinced my friends to come along with me and come see this thing, and I immediately recognized that what was going on at this pageant was distinctly different from whatever loose understanding of pageants I had in America, you know, which are either sort of kitsch entertainment or outdated or degrading to women. It was a really different thing going on there. And so I saw this, and I saw that it was hip, and I saw that it was youthful. Both the people, competing obviously were young, but the audience was just a very hip energetic audience, like with dancing and beer and, you know.
Yeah, I think when I think of pageants in the United States or North America, I don't think of hip.
No.
I still have the image of Burt Parks, who I think has been dead for 15 or 20 years. I don't know what channel Miss America's on. I don't know if it even still happens. So it just seems to be on this periphery and this little slice. But in Tanzania, it's more of a popular phenomenon?
It is, and not just sort of this thin slice. Over the years, it's been really associated with rural areas. Like, beauty pageants often start from agricultural festivals or, you know, county fairs, things like that. And a few years ago, the Miss America, I think it was Miss America or Miss USA, I forget, got relocated to the Country Music Channel, that's sort of reflecting that ruralification. They started out in Atlantic City or something, so they weren't always that way. But in East Africa, it's not only popular culture, it's also strictly urban. They just simply do not exist in rural areas. It's antithetical to what a rural Tanzanian woman should be, and they just would not fly at all. So they're a very different thing.
And they're seen as a potential springboard for success or an even more cosmopolitan lifestyle?
Yeah. So I think that these young women participate for a few different reasons. One reason is just it seems like fun, right? So it's a chance to wear things that you probably don't normally get to wear. It's a fairly conservative society, less so in urban areas. You know, the sequin dresses that many maybe young women get excited about wearing to proms here, you know, this is a chance to do that, to wear fashions and your hair in ways that maybe you've, maybe you wear sometimes, or maybe you don't quite feel comfortable wearing in your particular neighborhood or whatever. So it's certainly about experiencing or living this kind of cosmopolitan life, even for just a few weeks as you prepare and then perform. But then a big, big motivation for participating in these pageants is the hope of winning scholarship money, or money that very often is envisioned as going towards continuing education, because secondary school, high school is not free, and nor, of course, or trade schools or anything like that. And many young women, many Tanzanians in general, but particularly many young women, are curtailed even in getting a high school education, even a couple of years of high school education, for various reasons. And so the biggest reason being financial reasons. And so having this possibility of earning money to send yourself back to school is humongous, is a really, really big thing. And so for a few people, it's also about fame. It's about the potential of leaving Tanzania, where opportunity is seen as greater than where we're leaving your town, or, you know, leaving for searching for life, searching for an opportunity. But a big part of that opportunity is seen as, like, nested in education, and the money maybe would allow for that.
You study language, and language plays a part in these pageants. You write that some knowledge of English is likely to help you in the pageants more than being fluent in a heritage language like Swahili.
Yeah, right. So Swahili is the national language, and it's the most prominent language. If you ever visit Tanzania, that's what you hear on the streets. In rural and urban areas, that's widely spoken. It's the language of primary education. However, English and Swahili are co-official languages, and so a lot of sort of official business can officially be done in English. Pageants are officially Swahili and English. All this stuff is mapped out and spelled out. But the thing is, while they are co-official, English is very much the language of the elite. It is the medium of instruction in secondary school. So it's a class
elementary school.
Right. It's a class in elementary school. But the minute you get to high school, it is the medium of instruction. It's the language that the teacher's actually teaching in. And this is a very dramatic and problematic switch, because most of these students from elementary school, imagine you just had one class, you know, maybe with a teacher who really didn't know the language that well, which is often the case. And then all of a sudden, you're expected to learn everything in this language. And so what you have is a situation where people are expecting to learn and teach. The high school teachers themselves also often don't know English all that well. So you have English sort of elevated to this status that you must know English to succeed, and yet most people aren't actually in the opportunity, aren't actually in a position to learn English. So what that means then is in the pageants, if you speak English, you have a couple chances to speak, and you can choose to speak Swahili or English. Most people choose to speak Swahili, but almost all winners choose to speak English. So at lower level pageants, what you have where there's less access to a higher, secondary or university education, what you have is people sort of, young women using kind of a cobbled together variety of English that to your ears and my ears and even a fluent English speaker in East Africa's ears is not fluent English at all, but it's enough to sort of pass as English in this context, and she wins. English matters more than anything, typically. But then once she gets to the higher, to like Miss Tanzania, you really need to be a fluent, elite, actually fluent speaker of some variety of standard English.
Does this provide any conflict? I mean, this sort of that the more elite or wealthy know English and it's harder to learn for the middle.
It's huge. Conflict, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's something people talk about, not in the context of pageants, but just in general. The fact that English is out of reach, and yet it is absolutely critical to almost any kind of white collar success social mobility. English is really, really critical to that. And yet most people don't have access to that English. It's something that letters to the editor, students writing about it, politicians talking about it in Parliament. There's very much a lively and active debate still about what's going on. How do we fix this? Is it an issue of educational language policy? Is it an issue of educating our teachers better to be better teachers? Should we switch the medium of instruction in high school? What is going on here? So you see this playing out in pageants where it's really only those kids, those young women, who really are probably learning a very elite variety of English at home, regardless of school, that are able to win, who are able to win.
You're going to have a signing at Nightbird Books. Have you thought about what you'll discuss?
I kind of would like to talk about a couple chapters that are the newest stuff for me, that I've talked about the least, but that are maybe also the least they're sort of peripheral to the main threads of the book in a way, so I'm torn. But there's chapter six is about race and ethnicity in the pageants. They crowned a Miss Tanzania a few years ago of Indian South Asian origin, and this brought up all sorts of stuff about the nation and symbols of the nation and Swahili as symbolic of the nation and whether people should speak Swahili or not and things like that that I find exciting, I guess, and also the place of ethnicity, sort of like ethnic groups or tribal groups in East Africa that have sort of historically been urban areas are not appropriate spaces for being blatantly ethnic in Tanzania. And this has a long history we can talk about another time. And so one would expect in sort of these quintessentially urban settings of beauty pageants for there not to be displays of ethnicity. And in general, that's true, but they pop up in certain artistic realms and sort of surprising areas. And so that I also find sort of exciting. And we'll see if I decide to talk about that or go with sort of some of the more central themes.
Sabrina Billing's new book is Language and Globalization in the Making of a Tanzanian Beauty Queen. She'll discuss the book and sign copies of the book Friday evening beginning at 5:30 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. She's an assistant professor in the Department of African and African American Studies at the University of Arkansas, and she heads up the Swahili Language Program at the university. This is Ozarks at Large. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cave Springs. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new show tomorrow at noon. I'll be joined by Antoinette Grajeda. We will end the show today with music from one of the bands scheduled to play the Winter Waka Classic Thursday night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. 16 cities, including Fayetteville, are hosting the Winter Waka Classics throughout the rest of this month and part of February. 5 bands play at each venue in each of the 16 cities. 1 band at each venue will be added to the Wakarusa artist lineup this spring. The bands that are scheduled to play Thursday night at George's: Cadillac Jackson, Foley's Van, Randall Shreve and the Sideshow, and Revolution Butterfly, and Don't Stop Please. This is their song, Long List of Numbers. You can learn more about the band at the website don'tstopplease.com.
I watch them come, breathing, marching on, a stranger for evening news talk show host. The lights are on, they're sleeping, bills are paid, they keep me a soldier in on. Guess is wrong.